IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Kazem Ali Himani and Sheikh Qasim. Assalamu alaikum to both of you and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Let's get to today's topic, and that is an analysis on what the Islamic houses are doing all around the world. You know, of course, when you look at the world of Islam, these houses or the Islamic seminaries is better. This is a rough translation, but would not be, you know, a good translation for that. Schools, Islamic schools or seminaries all around the world are acting differently. For example, if you look at the Egypt and Al-Azhar one, you know, its function is something. But if you look at, for example, the Islamic House of Qom and Najaf, the function might be a little bit different. The both of them are doing research on Islam and different branches of the Islamic studies, but still there are some differences between the two. The main doubt that was made about the past generation of the Fuqaha, you know, that for example, an old alim beside a house in the far, far lands of Najaf or Qom or Mashhad cannot answer, for example, so many new doubts and questions about the new world. So this Jahanbini, this worldview, is lacked, for example, in the ideas of that, for example, old scholar, old man. And who is this man? This man is in charge of, for example, of an Islamic house. How could that house can answer the needs, the today's need of the people of human beings?
I think...
this is not my question, but the questions
yeah,
around.
Yeah, that's okay. We understand that the youth and the new generation has all these questions. Look, it's pretty clear. The ulama, the Hausa system, and the scholars are Warisul Anbiya. Mm-hmm. So when you say they're Warisul Anbiya, does that mean that they're only Warisul Anbiya for religious knowledge, religious information? Were prophets only well-versed in religious content? Or no, they were well-versed in all aspects of life. And the Anbiya were the leaders of the community. They were leaders of the society. They were leaders for the mankind in all fields, all areas, be it child upbringing, be it science, mm-hmm. be it technology, be it medicine, whatever. They were leaders in that. So mm-hmm. when we say ulama are warisul Anbiya, so mm-hmm. it doesn't mean it's only in that marifat-e-ilahi or marifat-e-dini that we are expected to be leaders. Okay. We are supposed to be Warisul Anbiya, meaning lead all the different fields that are related to human beings.
Mm-hmm. Take example of... The Quran says, لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ. It doesn't say, لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الْفِقْهِ فَقَط.
Correct. And deen is a way of life. Okay. Look at, take example of Ayatollah Hasanzadeh Amuli, right?
Yes.
He was a great scholar. On the other hand, he was a great mathematician, right? Yeah. So who says that you can't deal with science or mathematics or physics or theoretical physics or in other fields? So there is no restriction. It all boils down to the person's interest. That is he interested in such a field?
Okay.
Is he interested in maths? Is he interested in physics? Is he interested in science? Some people may not be interested. Mm-hmm. They're very, really happy with jurisprudence and usul and fiqh, and they feel that, look, there is a need in the society now to answer these questions. So someone has to be super expert in that field, so they spend all the time there. If you look at the Western world, you'll find they're philosophers, and they are just philosophers. They don't know anything about physics or chemistry. Mm-hmm. There are those who are chemists, those who are into astronomy, and they have no idea about philosophy. So today, the world is moving towards specialization.
Yes.
So that, keeping that in mind, you would find that some scholars are specializing into usul and fiqh.
Okay.
Some are specializing into fiqh rasane, which is media and telecommunication.
Yes.
And some are specializing into fiqh of child upbringing. Some are specializing into other specific
fields. The banking
system
fiqh. That's
for
right.
banking system.
Yes,
so now the fuqaha the scholars are also being focused on specialization. Yes. So they're moving into different fields, and there's no harm that one of the scholars get into physics.
But the standard knowledge of, you know, what is needed for being an alim, you know, what is needed for being a person who is faqih fid din, I think that is, you know, the standard knowledge is needed for all.
But Sheikh Qasim, some of these sciences and new systems are imported from the Western one, which has rules in the, we can say, undivine system of thought. And now when it comes to a Muslim land, we want to give it an Islamic color or religious color. For example, the banking system, the economic system, and the other parts around. How we can solve this problem? Isn't this a kind of imbalance or a harmony between the two?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the problem that we sometimes have, you know, that we just, without any, you know, research or any, you know, scrutiny, we just take in whatever we receive from the West.
The products.
You know, yeah, ignoring, you know, the bases and foundations of those knowledge or sciences. You know, where sometimes we're talking about the natural sciences like physics and biology and things like that. That may not be that much, you know, different from the way that those sciences are done, for example, in an Islamic region or Islamic country. But when it comes to human science or humanities or human sciences, that, you know, the story is completely different. So, for example, as you said, you know, economics that we're taking from the West that is based on the, you know, the Western values and not religious values or even better Islamic values. So so now here we have some, you know, differences between the ulama, that how should we treat those sciences? Should we just take, you know, take those sciences and try a sort of trim those sciences in an Islamic way, where we have to start from the
very beginning.
Yeah, from the very beginning of the
from
roots.
From scratch.
Yeah, from scratch of those, actually those sciences. And first of all, lay the Islamic foundations of those science, and then, you know, build up the building upon that foundation.
For sure, it's a teamwork, you know.
And now it's done in some, you know, in the Hausa, actually, in some institutes of Hausa. We have this, for example, Iqtisad Islami, Islamic economy.
Okay.
And, you know, that's actually, they are trying to lay out the, you know, the foundations of Islamic economy from the very beginning, taking use of, making use of the, you know, the Quran and traditions
and hadith,
and, you know, build up the economy that is actually expected from an Islamic government.
Okay, that's all right. Iqtisaduna again by Shahid Assad.
That's,
you know,
happening in many fields, including the development of the city. You must have heard that Ayatollah Araki is working on this project, and how to build an Islamic city. The heights of the building, should it be like 50 floors, 100 floors, or what does Islam say? What should be the distance between each house? What should be the sewer system? How should be the roads laid down? And he's trying to work on that. So each scholar is trying to do their part of the work.
Recently, there was a visit from the Minister of Economics of Iran to the houses of the ulama in Qom. And one of the main issues that was tackled by the ulama was this rate of the interest, or the, we can say, at the bank loans, which is really high. I do want to say the system and the banking system is getting far, far away from Qarzul Hasana, interest-free way of thought, which if you help, your income would be multiplied, But the case is vice versa now. And on different occasions, you know, when they got a visit to the Islamic houses and the ulama and the maraja, the first suggestion is cut this out, loan without interest, loan without any fine, If the repay is late, do not put the fine on the shoulders of the people and this and that. On the contrary, we have some people who have a utopian look at the Western system of the banking. But I do want to say, in the banking system of the West, this is so too. The fines are over there, the loans are over there, the repayment will be with the high rate of interest, The case is so. But from an Islamic land and from Islamic banking system, we do not expect, for example, interest rate, usury, or something like that. And this makes the problem really aggravated. I think it needs a teamwork of the ulama, first of all, to sit down, discuss all the, we can say, sources and resource books in order to deduce the laws from, we can say, the books, and then make it adaptable with the society in which they are living in. And each Muslim land is different from the other one. For example, if you are living in an African land, majority of the Muslims, or the Arab one, or the Persian one, or the Turkish one, the system might be very much different. Isn't it so? Do you agree? If you got any problem.
No, actually, the point is that if you say that, you know, they take it and then teamwork with other countries and then...
with our own ones. I mean, from the Hausa and the university, for example, the academic ones, they can co-work, isn't it?
Correct. See, the Islam has a different approach towards economics by itself. You look at some of the ahadith, it has a different approach. But currently, the world is being ruled by capitalist mentality. Even those who live in communist society like Russia and China, and they believe in communism, if you look at their economic system, it's still being governed by the capitalist mentality, right? So one of the challenges is that, fair enough, we can have that kind of economic system, we can have that kind of system developed and built, but when you want to implement it, are people ready for such a system? You know, within this framework of Islamic countries, if you look at the Middle East, with all those Islamic countries here, even if you have an Islamic economic system, would people really abide by it, or you know, it's just going to take all the bashing? For example, one of the hadiths, I'll just mention it, you know, when we were reading through Maqasib and then we were referring to some ahadiths. One of the ahadith says that, you know, if you promise your brother, mu'min brother, that come to my shop and I'll take care of you, or I'll give you a rebate, then when this person visits you, the hadith says that you should charge him the least profit, you know, literally cost to cost, right? Yes. Now, if we have this kind of economic system, would people actually abide by it? Would they follow it? Or they'd say, brother, I can't do that because I can't live my life that way, right?
Okay.
So, to a certain extent, yes, the foundations have to be laid. But on the other hand, the people have to be prepared for it, right? Yes. If people are not prepared and you have an amazing Islamic economic system, it's still going to fail because people are not prepared for it.
Now, Sheikh Qasim, another question. This co-work, I mean, between the experts from the Hausa and from the universities, can be seen in the Islamic Republic of Iran, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, for example, as a model, because we are still new, you know, we got, you know, about 40, 45 years after the Islamic Revolution took place, and we are still at the very beginning of the path and the road. But what they say is that when Imam Khomeini struggled for this revolution, the world was surrounded by two important blocks of thought. I mean, the capitalism and the communism. And this was the third one that comes between. So I'm bringing a new model based on the prophetic tradition and the teachings of the infallible. So do you think that still there is hope introduce new methods and new methodologies that can bring a kind of peaceful coexistence between university and Hausa based on the teachings of the late Imam Khomeini, the Rahbar, you know, and the Islamic system of Iran now?
You know, when you talk about coexistence, it sort of implies that there is a tension between these. There is no tension here.
Exactly. And I was wondering that why are you presuming that there is a tension or conflict between Hausa and university?
There is not a tension. But it might be that there are some imbalances between the two, okay?
There might be some lack of, you know, enough cooperation.
Okay.
Or there have to be actually some this sort of... Because it used to be before the revolution of Iran. It used to be, you know, the way was like, you know, the Hausa was sort of separated from the universities since, you know, the sort of sciences or knowledges that have been tackled in these two places or these two institutions were different. But nowadays, you know, we talk already about the you know, the ways that these two are actually intermingled, and they have to work with with one another in order for reaching their goal. So I believe that actually before the revolution, towards the beginning of the revolution, it is started by peoples like Ayatollah Mufattih.
Yes.
And then it continued after the revolution. It was 2 days.
Shahid Mutahhari's presence at the university.
Yeah, actually, it was 2 days ago. Yes. I was invited to Tehran to mm-hmm. give some lectures for, you know, university professors, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I had almost four hours with these people yes. who were coming actually from scientific backgrounds. Some okay. of them were, you know, teaching, I don't know, physics, some of them chemistry and things like that. And we have, you know, very good discussions with one another. Okay. And I think that it's in a good, actually, situation now, and it's getting better, inshallah.
Okay, inshallah, hand in hand, the Hausa University, this calls from both, in order inshallah. To solve the problems to the Muslim lands, because nowadays the people in the Eastern world, especially in the countries around Islamic Republic, you can find it many, that the whole system is getting into the hands of the capitalist idea. And nothing remains out of the Islamic color, Islamic fragrance over there. You can see what's happening, you know, in the world of Islam nowadays. This kind of independence from the Western capitalist idea, I think, is good. But it needs its own ulema and scholars from within the lands of Islam. Thank you very much, Sheikh Qasim. And Sheikh Qasim for your presence in the program Viewpoints. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Call of Islam page. Also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I